Blog Talk Radio.
For Saturday, December 2nd, 2017, you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast Saturday Edition, a.k.a. the Deep Dive, and I'm Rich Fan. Having a little bit of technical difficulty, so if you didn't hear any of that, you're listening to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. It's Saturday, December 2nd, 2017. It is SEC Championship Sunday. It's Championship Sunday for most college football, and we're talking not football, we're talking wrestling. So tune in, and if you want to contribute to the cause, definitely dial in at area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And, of course, as always, you could reach us on the Deep Dive via email at pwtdive@gmail.com. That's pwtdive@gmail.com. I'm looking forward to today's episode. We're going to be doing a little bit of talking about Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. And I'm bringing on Timothy Robert Buchan of Lucha Undead and This Week in Wrestling on the PBTN-PWO Pod Network to give us a little information on the promotion. While I do watch things like their Battle of Los Angeles tournament and a few of their shows, and you know, you'll hear me talking with Sean Raddick and Sean Raddick's Wrestling Audio Community about some of these things, I don't watch it close enough to have the pulse of the intricacies of PWG. So I wanted to make sure we had someone on here that could speak to those things and give you guys a little insight into that world and why you should be interested in watching the shows. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the week that was. Obviously, we're still living in a mid pay-per-view post big show world where things are kind of building. So on television, it was kind of more holding serve. We talked on the East Coast cast on Wednesday about the three women factions and how similar they were. But I also was treated to, on Thursday, an opportunity to go to see NXT Live, which was great because I got to see Aleister Black, I got to see Ruby Riott, and Sonya Deville, as well as the Red Cup Rebellion of Street Profits and a few others. Ultimately, I thought it was a good show. I missed one of our Torch folks, Dominic, there, and that led me to the inspiration for another dive down the road about fan interaction and what's too much, what's over the line, because Mark Madd, former Torch contributor and former WCW commentator, phone host and rock and tour, you know, king of industry, yada yada, was there in the front row, and three fans decided to heckle him and get shouted down just because they wanted to. And it really took away from the main event, which was a three-way between Andre Cien Almas, Adam Cole, and the Messiah of the Backbreaker, Roderick Strong. And so for me, I really wish they hadn't done that, because it was really a pain in the rear to have to hear people saying really ignorant things about Mark Madden just because they wanted to be heard. I really look forward to the next time they come to Pittsburgh, mainly because each time they come, it's been like a year and a half, 2 year period. And when you have that delay in the roster, you have the churn, and kind of like when we talk about PWG, you get to see new faces, new places, what new teams have formed, what new factions have formed, and how do they fit into the grand scheme of things with the company at large. So yeah, I was really intrigued and really enjoyed that. So before we go to our first break, and before I bring on our co-host who seems to be missing in – we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, We're going to start taking your calls, answering your questions about PWG, and talking about a little more than the average bear here on the Deep Dive.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Okay, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich Van. I'm, of course, Rich Van, and we're going to start with our first caller, 862. Why don't you state your name, where you're calling from, and welcome to the Deep Dive.
It's Kylan. Rich, how are you?
I'm good, Kylan. How about yourself?
I'm quite well, Rich. Wow. I must say, as you know, I'm one that greatly enjoys challenges as I face them on a daily basis, but this one was particularly interesting because, as I'm sure you well know, there is barely any free footage of PWG available. So when you said to us last week that our assignment was we would be discussing PWG, I said to myself right away, uh-oh, this is going to be really challenging. But as usual, I found a way to execute this to my usual well-versed standard, even though this is not going to be of the traditional means, as most of my questions are.
Oh, well, good. And you know, one thing about PWG, and you just mentioned it, is the difficulty getting a hold of them is mainly because they only deal in DVDs or Blu-rays. There is no streaming service. There are no opportunities to download on, you name the on-demand platform. They keep it old school. They stay in the same place in Reseda, and that's where they're going to be. So, yeah, go ahead. Fire away, my man.
My first question is going to be, besides Trevor Lee and some of the more known, I won't say well-known names, because there are a lot of people, not including you or me, that don't watch places like Impact or CWF Mid-Atlantic. But besides Trevor Lee and some of the more well-known names that are featured in PWG at this time, who are you surprised that has not, who are you surprised by that has not been signed by a major organization at this time?
That is a really good question, and I'm going to bring on my co-host for today, Timothy. Timothy, welcome to the Deep Dive. Good evening, and I'm going to have first crack at Kylan's question.
Okay, you're allowing me to have the first go here then?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're saying who is surprising that's in PWG right now that isn't signed or hasn't shown up in PWG yet?
Who are you surprised that has not been signed by any major organization, WWE or otherwise?
Of the current guys right now, I mean, Ricochet, obviously, but he is technically signed or in between contracts, would be a top one to say. Otherwise, so many of the guys in PWG now are locked up with some kind of contract somewhere that it's not, you know, it's not really about that anymore. Half the guys are New Japan contracted, TNA contracted, or Lucha Underground. So the question that you asked makes sense from a PWG of a few years ago, which I think is what a lot of people is their touchstone for it, when it was kind of more of a mixture of the top hottest unsigned talent. While now, I mean, because of the landscape of indie wrestling in general, a lot of these guys are signed somewhere. So the reason why they're, you know, they're there is because they're not in WWE yet. I guess they may end up there, or some of them are just choosing to stay independent.
Okay, that's an excellent point. My second question for you, and Rich, has PWG proverbially cut off their nose to spite their face by staying the course of only being available through DVD means? And why do you think they have chosen this particular path as opposed to trying to obtain a deal with some kind of a streaming service or going the traditional local television or Mercury cable television path?
Well, I mean, a lot of people will tell you that it's, you know, they're really, it's all about who's, you know, who they can use. They couldn't be on a streaming service because of contracts to Dragon Gate USA or Evolve. I guess Dragon Gate USA, you'd have to be talking to Triple H at this point to have someone who believes that that company still exists. But they would tell you that those are the reasons why. I'll tell you the real reason why. It's like a mix of fear and laziness. A lot of people who aren't super familiar with PWG don't realize that three to 4 years ago, the company was essentially almost out of business. I'm trying to think of what year it was, but they ran a Bola that was, oh, it was 2011. They ran a Battle of Los Angeles. They're kind of, you know, pearl shining beacon on the hill event that was only one night that year because they were doing so poorly they couldn't really afford to run two night shows. And they were running so sparsely that I think realistically they found a business model that they know works. There is a streaming option for PWG on the High Spots Network. The shows are about a year behind at this point. But if you don't want to buy piecemeal DVDs, you can watch them streaming on High Spots if you don't mind being a year behind. But realistically, I think they'd rather stay in the venue that they're at, use the talent that they have. I talked about so many of the talent are under contract at different places, so it does make DVDs, live streaming, television kind of a logistical nightmare for them. So realistically, it's a mixture of it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, and not really having aspirations to be much bigger than they already are. That's another thing that I think people don't take into account is that the owners are two guys who started this out when they were still pro wrestlers. Neither of them still wrestle. The third owner, who used to actually still be a wrestler and an owner, has recently left the company, started another company of his own. And, so realistically, I mean, the two guys who don't even professionally wrestle anymore, how much do you expect them to really put into a wrestling company, even if they love it, because it's not the same game for them that it was when they started this company all the way back, you know, in 2002, 2003.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. And you just made me inadvertently stumble into my third and potentially final question. If PWG all of a sudden happens to go out of business, what do you and Rich believe the legacy of PWG would be to the wrestling industry?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think at the moment, the legacy would be kind of Kevin Owens, Kevin Steen, El Generico, Sami Zayn. The idea of wrestlers who can be a hybrid of kind of comedy and serious wrestling being treated as you know, kind of a mixture of both things without having to be focused on kind of the old school would probably be the biggest legacy that people would remember. But beyond that, I mean, there's a lot of history in the company, a lot of really great matches that happen. So it depends on how you look at the concept of a legacy. Is the legacy the tape library that they leave? Is the legacy kind of the influence that they have going forward? And I mean, I hate to say it, as a big fan of PWG and a regular, like when it comes down to impact in the wrestling business as a whole, I would say that they wouldn't have a huge legacy that would last and last for decades. I mean, ECW in some ways is, you know, looked at as a similar kind of endeavor. People have compared PWG to ECW, and I think ECW's legacy has lasted all this time, and I don't know that that PWG has a legacy that lasts for decades. I honestly think it might fade into obscurity as a kind of place where, you know, the kind of people who sit and listen to this show will remember fondly great matches that came from PWG 20, 30 years down the line. But I think the average wrestling fan ends up having no idea that the company even existed.
Yeah, and I would kind of, to jump on what Timothy's saying, I think the legacy of PWG, and this is why I really, and Kylan, thank you for these questions. I really like the legacy of, liken the legacy of PWG to my favorite European promotion, Progress, in that they sell themselves as punk rock pro wrestling. Whereas to me, I see PWG as a similar type of thing in a musical sense. They're that venue where you go and you know you're going to hear bands before they become big, and you're okay sitting on the, you know, by the bar with the stool that's kind of bent like so, or there's gum on the floor because you know you're going to hear something really cool. So the ambiance is part of it, but also makes it in the moment. If you're 20 years down the road and you're telling someone you were in a veteran VA or not?
Yeah, VFW hall.
Yeah, it's a VFW hall, and it's like a billion degrees and people are passing out all around you, but you got to see a guy called Pentagon El Zero Miedo. Your kids are probably going to look at you and say, what the heck are you talking about? But when you say you saw the Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks now, and you say you were there and, you know, you got to see it with, you know, luminaries such as, I'm not even going to pronounce the guy's name, I can't even pronounce his name. He's married with the woman from Modern Family.
Manganiello.
Yeah. So you could say you saw it with this guy, and someone might have a frame of reference if they have a, you know, a good mind for 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or something like that. But ultimately, it's going to be another thing that, you know, kind of falls by the wayside, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, not everything is meant to be this thing that's lasts the test of time.
Yeah, that's definitely a good way to look at it. It's definitely of the moment. I will say that. I don't know that PWG ages, or modern PWG right now ages super well in 10 to 15 years from now.
But believe it or not, and I just thought of this as you were answering this question, Rich, even though the style doesn't completely mesh together in certain ways, I would actually compare PWG to somewhere like a of all places, House of Hardcore, because even though the ECW style has severely worn out its welcome to most individuals today, Tommy Dreamer still does, by all accounts, quality shows, and in most cases, he either nearly sells out or sells out whatever arena he's running in with people that are really excited to be there, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Colin. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, as always.
Rich, and to follow your kind of thread there about PWG being a punk club with a tattered bar or whatever and gum on the floor and all this, Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore, if you're going to compare it to that model of PWG, would be the local Indian casino that has a venue that shows cover bands. People are excited to be there. They sell out, but the art is not really at the same level, and it's definitely not the cutting edge kind of these are the guys who you haven't seen yet. It's a lot of people doing, come and see what you remember from your childhood or, what your dad told you about from ECW in the kind of a modern style is essentially what it would be compared to, I think.
Okay, that's fair. And I want to, before we get too deep into anything further, I'm going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to properly introduce you, pick your brain a little bit about the history of PWG and what you think is the most important things going forward for people to know about the company and kind of what's going on now. So you guys hold tight. When we come back, Timothy and I are going to drop some knowledge on you about PWG. And I'm really going to get an education, so I'm really looking forward to this here on The Deep Dive.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, welcome back to The Deep Dive with Rich and Timothy. At this point, I want to kind of yield the floor. So, Timothy, why don't you tell the folks a little bit about yourself, your various outlets by which you can show people your love of pro wrestling, and how they can find you on social media.
All right. Well, I'm Timothy Robert Buckner. I just got finished before we started this recording my other podcast, This Week in Wrestling. It's a modern wrestling podcast on the Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed, which is kind of known more for its vintage wrestling podcast. So Between the Sheets, a very popular podcast, used to be on the feed. It got kind of slipped off, but still, kind of part of the network. Titans of Wrestling, where the big boys play. WorldCast now covering World Class Championship Wrestling. We're kind of the stalwarts of the network. We cover the modern wrestling. That is my thing. Indies international wrestling is what I'm all about. European scene. You talk about progress. I mean, I used to have a lot of passion for progress, similarly to the passion that I have had for PWG. I'd say it's waning slightly just because of you talk about the heat and the tickets and all this. So you can find me by looking up that podcast there on Pro Wrestling Only. You can also always follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. That is the name of my other podcast, where with my good friend, my good buddy, best buddy, we drink craft beers and talk about them. And then we also interview wrestling pundits like Rich yourself. We'll probably have to be a guest here coming up in the future. We interview people along those lines. We've had the great Dylan Hales, Parm from from Where the Big Boys Play and Titans of Wrestling I talked about earlier. Brad and Chad from PTGN, Scott Criscolo, you know, a bunch of different people. People from Podswoggle. Just kind of get on Wrestling Pundits, talk to them about their lives, talk to them what they're into other than wrestling, talk to them about their history on the internet and wrestling. And that's kind of primarily my thing. Before that, I was a member of the Wrestling with Words family. Unfortunately, that site has died down. But we still keep it very close together, and kind of a lot of us still talk about wrestling here and there. So, you know, just get active on Twitter and hang out and all that. That's kind of my whole thing. But, yeah, that's it. That's it for me. I'll take up my time kind of shilling my stuff there, Rich. That's all I need to say.
Oh, that's good. And I just want – I always love when people are coming on and they have their own thing, because I want – this to be, obviously everyone always talks about it in a negative, like, oh my God, there's so many wrestling podcasts. But I look at it as a positive, because the reason Wade gave me this show is I get obsessive about certain things, but I want to hear about what other people are obsessed by, what other people love and enjoy in wrestling. Because newsflash, we're all not experts in everything. So when I can have a blind spot like PWG and you can come on and fill it, or point me to someone who I'll have in January that can fill my Exotico blind spot. It's just really neat that everyone can listen to someone talk about it with the passion that would allow you to want to follow it and seek it out, as opposed to, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's for sure. And there's a lot of people who know a lot more about everything out there, honestly, than you know, you or me know about really any topic. But you know, PWG, I feel like I heard you talking about want to talk about it. I've got my history there. I've been a longtime regular of PWG living here in Los Angeles. I've been going to the shows pretty regularly. Missed a couple shows this year for the first time in a few years. But even before coming to the shows live, I used to watch them on the DVD and other illegal methods. I talked about the High Spots Wrestling Network being a good way to stream it now. But for the longest time, and I think it's going on right now, the real trick was for the people who wanted to catch up on PWG but weren't completely made out of money is the holiday sale. I think they do 5 DVDs for $20, or it's 4 for $20. It's one or the other. But you can go through their list of back catalog of DVDs that they have. You get them all for a good price, about $5. They ship them out for you. The deal's going on right now. It's probably like, you know, prowrestlinggorilla.com/winter sale is normally the URL, but you can find it. And that's a good way to kind of get into PWG on the cheap. I think people are always questioning that. But also with the High Spots Network, I mean, I think it's, you know, under $10 a month. It's probably $9.99 a month. And you can watch all the old PWG, you can, you know, to your heart's content. And there's a lot of really good stuff there to kind of mine through, and a lot of really interesting stuff and stuff that you'll see, and kind of, you know, as you go back and watch old matches, you'll go like, oh, I never knew this match happened, or, oh, there's that spot that I'm now seeing on WWE TV every week. This is where it started out. And it's kind of interesting in that regard.
And one of the first things I was looking at in terms of questions I wanted to ask you about PWG is you mentioned the owners, and one of them is a former co-owner. It was very intriguing to me that it's a promotion that was run at a time by active wrestlers, and now they're no longer. But how did that work, and how did that come about? Like, what was, from your understanding, what was the reasoning behind it?
Well, I mean, there's been interviews and places that you can look it up and see, but the company started out, I think it's the PWG6, I believe it is, that were 6 guys here in Southern California who had a mixture of experience in wrestling, but a very similar kind of view on the landscape of wrestling, having had one too many promoters kind of either screw them over or disappear. The story I recently heard Excalibur talking about, kind of the impetus for the original start of PWG, was Epic War Promotion, which was a really, really interesting promotion here in Southern California that was, in a lot of ways, the proto-PWG, booking a lot of the same guys. They were bringing in people like Sabu and other kind of legends of the ECW era to come out and work random matches with, like, Super Dragon or Brian Danielson. So the six who started out, Top Gun Talwar, he's disappeared. He was a mainstay of PWG in the beginning. Scott Lost, who to me is always one of my favorites, SoCal wrestling kind of guys that really gets overlooked for his history. He retired and is now doing comic books. You can actually find him online. I know he has a YouTube channel where he reviews kind of Funko Pop dolls, which he's, I shouldn't say dolls, what am I doing? he has Funko Pop figures that he collects that he opens up on YouTube and talks about You got Disco Machine. He's another one who retired. He had actually, I think when they started the company, had the most experience. He had actually had tours of Osaka Pro. You can go back and watch some stuff from him in Japan, working kind of local indies here, Lucha Libre style in Southern California. He's since retired. And then Joey Ryan, Excalibur, and Super Dragon, who were the owners up until recently, two of which are still the owners, they kind of joined. They said, you know, they showed up to go to a show. The promoter essentially had split town. He did, you know, was one too many, didn't have the money. He was kind of a, you know, hate to use the insider term, but kind of a money mark who was running shows, even though he wasn't making money out of it, just because he enjoyed it. And finally, he just skipped town, and the six of them kind of got together and said, well, how much do we really need to run this company ourselves? And us being wrestlers, we'll know not to get taken advantage of, but we'll also know to, like, take care of each other. And not kind of, and that was the impetus for starting the company as far as the lore goes. As I said, you know, Joey Ryan was a partial owner up until recently. I don't know the 100% backstory because I'm not involved with it personally. The understanding, I think, for most people is that he is no longer involved, as he's opened up his own company called Bar Wrestling that runs at a VFW hall in a similar Los Angeles location. You can catch their stuff on High Spots as well if you're interested in checking that out. There's some good action there. A lot more mix of people from Lucha Underground with Joey Ryan's connection to Lucha Underground, leaving PWG now run exclusively by Excalibur and Super Dragon. Excalibur being really the voice of PWG, in some way the face of PWG as the liaison to the board of directors, this is his official title, as well as commentator, and it seems to be fill-in ring announcer when necessary due to missing ring announcers, and then Super Dragon, who's kind of the brains behind the whole thing. I've heard at times the sole employee of PWG, as in the only person who is a full-time employee slash owner of PWG with no other job. That I guess that status can fluctuate depending on how they're doing monetarily wise, but that's kind of his role, is running everything, editing videos, booking shows, putting everything together. So that's kind of the background when it comes to ownership and kind of who's running the show now.
Okay. And yeah, absolutely, Kennedy, as you're going through, by no means do I expect you to be like the Grand Poobah. I just like hearing it from someone who has that background and kind of can flesh out what the Wikipedia can, if it makes sense.
I try to.
It's interesting to me. One of the first matches I got pulled into when it came to PWG was Daniel Bryan versus El Generico. And that was from like way in the Wayback Machine. And it was really interesting because I hadn't seen El Generico when he was on the indies. It was something that just came as part of a pack a friend made for me and sent me like as a jump drive of matches he had gotten off the internet, and he's like, you need to see these. And so I was just like, holy crap. And at the time, I don't think they were in the same hall, and if they were, it just wasn't lit enough to look the same. But fast forward, even though they're in this VFW, I think the lighting and some of the production value they bring makes it not as cramped, if that makes sense. It seems like the fans kind of are into it. Like in big matches, they're clapping on the mats. You know, you'll see, like I said before, so some of the famous people in the crowd, like, you know, a Ronda Rousey. If I remember correctly, there was a match where Ronda chopped someone and wound up hitting them in the throat. I want to say
Biff Busick.
Body.
Oney Lorcan.
Oh, Biff Busick. Oh, my God, Biff Busick. Yes. Oh, for those who don't know Oney Lorcan outside of his very weird NXT name, Biff Busick is that's a whole conversation in and of itself. Could you talk a little bit about some of your favorite guys who are now in NXT, in my opinion, kind of languishing, and what you enjoyed about them, or maybe the wrestlers you enjoy now?
So we just talked about Oney Lorcan. He's a guy who really barely got a run in PWG, if we're perfectly honest. You talk about, Apollo Crews. I mean, the guy worked, I think, two PWG matches, supposed to be three, missed one of them, and really was like a guy that was, oh, man, this is going to be a lot of fun to see him in the PWG setting after being a big fan of his in Dragon Gate in Japan for a while there. Getting to see him up close and personal was super impressive, and he disappeared relatively quickly. Biff as well. Tommaso Ciampa, obviously out with an injury now, but he was a guy that I was just absolutely in love with in PWG, and I think really in a lot of ways, put it together. Yes, he was having good matches with a lot of really interesting kind of fire and showing off in ROH before he showed up in PWG, but I think he really learned how to work a crowd in PWG in a lot of different ways, really kind of a mixture of you know, fun, lightheartedness, but also being able to take it seriously. He learned how to get over as, you know, almost like a top guy, you could say, someone who could be at the top of the card in main events in PWG. So, you know, that's a guy who, unfortunately, then turns around and gets injured. But his tag team partner, who, you know, his injury kind of affected their run, Johnny Gargano, another guy who I wouldn't say doesn't have a similar thing to Biff Music or Tommaso Ciampa, where both Biff Music, you know, former CZW champion before showing up to PWG. Actually, I think he showed up to PWG with the CZW title, if I recall correctly, because I did get to see it up close and personal for the first time, which was fun. They kind of, I guess, really made a name in PWG beyond what they saw. Gargano, I think, was already really seen at a certain level by the time he showed up to PWG. And maybe, in a lot of ways, you could argue that Gargano was the beginning of a lot of guys showing up at PWG almost late. A guy after him, Dalton Castle, who should have been in PWG way sooner than he should have, like, seemed like a war machine. Donovan Dijak, who's now in NXT. Keith Lee feels like he should have been in PWG way before he showed up there. Pete Dunne, who's now, you know, the UK champion, a big deal. He almost felt like he showed up at PWG just a little too late as well. So, realistically, there was a time, and that's kind of the tale of PWG, that guys like you talk about Danielson versus El Generico, if it's the match I'm thinking of on Giant Size Annual number 4, which is probably in my top 5 PWG shows of all time. It was their anniversary show for their 4th anniversary. It's amazing. Brian Danielson versus El Generico, if it is the match that I'm thinking of, where Danielson's got his head wrapped with a big bandage and they're fighting for the title. Okay, earlier in the match, that bandage came from Brian Danielson wrestling the Necro Butcher. And so this is what I'm talking about. PWG was able to take a guy like the Necro Butcher, who was not seen as anything other than a blood and guts, kind of slice and dice guy doing death matches, and they made him have a match with the best technical wrestler in the world, Brian Danielson. They kind of put him on the map as more than just a death match guy on this show. Then Brian Danielson turns around, has a phenomenal match with El Generico for the title afterwards. And at that time, before, you know, the kind of the current where the guys are showing up too late, at that time, these guys were showing up at the perfect time. El Generico and Kevin Steen, when I was talking to Kylan about the impact, the legacy of PWG, those guys, are the legacy of this PWG early on, where they were making stars. Kevin Steen and El Generico became top-level talent. The guys who could main event in WWE are on you know, WrestleMania, all of this because of their work in PWG, because of PWG giving them the ball and letting them run with it to do everything they could. And that's kind of the tale of, like, PWG. It's almost like 4 different companies as it's grown and evolved over the years. It went from just a local Southern California independent with a few fly-ins to kind of a star factory to a dream match kind of sanctuary between ROH and WWN talent to now, I guess, I don't even know what it is now. I guess it's like finishing school before you show up to NXT, I guess, is the way people look at it. It's kind of your last stop before you end up on the big time. And so that's kind of PWG's history, I guess, in broad strokes, if you looked at it as like the different eras of the company.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned this when you were talking about my Daniel Bryan interest in terms of the match against El Generico. But one of the things that struck me, and again, similar to Progress, about PWG was the outstanding naming of their shows. So Giant Size Annual. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, no, because as a big comics fan, that – as soon as you said that, I was like, of course they would name their 4th anniversary that. And it's just so cool. Or, you know, a few years ago they had they had Prince, they had Bowie, they had my brain escapes me, but I'll defer to you. But these names, every time I hear a PWG show name, I'm just enthralled.
Oh, there's like Steen Wolf, which people always love that show. And the name is great, you know, and there's Hollywood Globetrotters. That was actually named that because it was one of the first times that they were performing in a in a building that was actually in Hollywood, technically. I think it was like North Hollywood. And it was after they had just gotten back from European vacation, which is obviously a reference to those National Lampoon movies, you know what I mean? And then they have a history of like shows that are called Card Subject to Change due to the card having been changed so much. Like they'll change the name after that. And then they created the Mystery Vortex concept, which I think has now become Unboxing Live for Progress. And other companies are kind of trying to do a very similar thing. And, you know, they had a selection of Use Your Illusion. There's always a lot of, like, references to Guns N' Roses. Kevin Steen and Super Dragon are Appetite for Destruction is the name of that tag team, you know. But you go on even beyond that. When they were having their first tag team champions, they had the Tango and Cash Invitational, and they had all of the tag teams had names that were derived from movies. So everyone was like kind of named after whatever, like different movies. So I think it was Samoa Joe and TJP. I think he was under a mask at the time, but they were Lilo and Stitch, you know, and it was stuff like that where Super Dragon, American Dragon were Double Dragon, you know, so they had all of these different teams, but they all had names that were based off of different movies. And so that creativity, it kind of goes in so many different ways as they do. They kind of poke fun at the naming game and what's able to be allowed. But one thing, like, kind of interesting to think about is they had Schadenfreude, which became like kind of a buzzword after they had named a show that. I'm not saying PWG naming their show Schadenfreude is what made like people like to use that term, but it does show that they were kind of on the vanguard of like, oh, this is an interesting concept that the Germans have a word for meaning deriving pleasure from other people's suffering. You know, let's name our show after that. And then that kind of grabbed the cultural zeitgeist around the similar time. So again, it just goes back to show that PWG is so current and kind of on the pulse of society writ large, not just wrestling culture.
No, that's standing. And speaking of that, before we get into, there are a couple of factions, and one in particular I want to hop on. I want to go to a quick break because we do have a caller that is on hold that wants to ask us some questions. So when we come back, Timothy and I are going to talk a little bit about Mount Rushmore, the World's Cutest Cat Tag Team, and with you, if you guys decide to call. That's area code 515-605-9345. Or you can email me at pwtdive@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to answer with Timothy any questions you have about PWG. And if I can't answer it, I'm definitely going to tag out to him because I don't want to give you any stupid information. But that's, of course, going to be after this next break here on the LiveCast.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch LiveCast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich and Timothy. We're going to be talking with a caller in a second, but before we do, Mount Rushmore, it much like the iterations of PWG itself, as I watched or as I saw highlights of the group, they took on changes as either people got signed or people departed. Can you describe how you viewed the group and what do you think would be the defining characteristic if you're looking at a Mount Rushmore match, either in a group setting or when it was maybe Steen or Strong or whomever?
I mean, for me, I think the best, the kind of ultimate Mount Rushmore match was, I think it was 2016 Bola Night 1. It was 2015 Bola. It was the Night 1, and it was, it's Night 2. Sorry, guys. I am just trying to – I do not have the most perfect memorization here. Yeah, Night 2, 2015 Bola. It was the Jacksons, the Young Bucks, and Super Dragon versus Biff Busick, Trevor Lee, and Andrew Everett. This was off the heels of essentially the formation of Mount Rushmore 2.0, ruining the Trevor Lee, Andrew Everett tag team title run, and Biff Busick having begged for his chance to face Super Dragon for months online, including an appearance on the Pro Wrestling Observer live cast, talking about wanting to wrestle Super Dragon on an interview with Brian Alvarez, which was kind of interesting to see someone using a, you know, a comparable to the Torch pay news site as almost a way to work an angle. Who knows if they were working an angle or if it was just Biff was just openly talking and it kind of developed that way. But this match was just nutty, lots of great action. You have Super Dragon, I think after this point Super Dragon gets injured, disappears, and that's kind of it. But this was not Rushmore 2.0, obviously. So this is the Jacksons, the Young Bucks, Super Dragon, and Roderick Strong. Eventually, Adam Cole joins up with them, plays a really interesting dynamic between Roderick Strong and Adam Cole, kind of vying for that top spot. So that was a nice wrinkle towards the end of the kind of the Mount Rushmore run. Roddy Strong eventually leaving kind of ends Mount Rushmore. Now, the formation of Mount Rushmore was really interesting after kind of, I wouldn't say directly feuding for years, but a kind of on the backboard feud of Kevin Steen and Adam Cole throughout Adam Cole's entire title run, having, you know, won the title from Kevin Steen. Eventually, Kevin Steen got to the point where he was kind of done trying to wait for his turn to get the title back from Cole or be able to beat Cole with all of his shenanigans, and he decided to just join up with Adam Cole and create this insane, unbeatable super faction that did produce a lot of really good matches with the Young Bucks and Kevin Steen, and was really kind of a way to keep Kevin Steen fresh as a heel while not being in the title contention, because him and Adam Cole's kind of run had really lost any luster of having new matches. So that's kind of my breakdown for Mount Rushmore. It was definitely a really, really interesting and cool storyline that spanned a couple of years, and I think a lot of people got really into. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot more to PWG than Mount Rushmore, but I could definitely see how it caught a lot of people's attention and really helped kind of bring a lot of fans into the PWG company. I mean, around the time that Mount Rushmore was happening, that's when PWG really started to explode. I mean, it doesn't hurt that you got the Young Bucks and Adam Cole together. I mean, three of the most handsome guys on the indies in one team is definitely going to get everybody a little bit excited.
Yeah. And the world's cutest tag team. I saw the match versus the Young Bucks. I actually chatted for a little bit with the fine hosts of the Talking Cheap Pod about it at the time, because that had been the big debate between violence against women in wrestling. And outside of Japan, I had never seen a woman get physically beaten the way that match went with the Bucks. And I have been a fan not only of the world's cutest tag team, but also the individual members since then. So what were your thoughts on the team? And I know they still do it here and there, but I know what you just mentioned as far as Joey Ryan starting his own promotion, I would assume would mean less appearances by both of them in PWG.
Yeah, I mean, she was kind of disappearing off and on even before that, realistically. That's kind of a mix of stuff with Johnny Gargano and taking time off. And I'm not going to even like kind of guess the situation, because I have heard different people kind of grumble about secrets going on with her and missing other shows and all this stuff. And I don't know what was actually going on backstage realistically with them, but I do know that the Candace was really already sporadically kind of disappearing. There's an interesting wrinkle, especially for people who are live at the shows, that doesn't may or may not come across super well on tape, or you just don't know because you don't know the people in the building. But there was a lot of backlash towards the world's cutest tag team for the live crowd towards the end, a lot of it coming towards Joey Ryan. I mean, people were just kind of sick of him. It almost in some ways plays into him leaving the company altogether, is that people were really sick and tired of him. I heard a lot of people, and I hate to say it, but be even kind of slightly petty about their issues with Joey Ryan being more personal than professional, being less about his actions in the ring and more about his actions outside of the ring. And that kind of drove people to not liking that tag team anymore and really just getting sick and tired of them. But when they started, I mean, they were the most overact in the company. They still are super popular all over the place. And I think a lot of it comes from it really was that classic, almost like Shibata and Goto, Kenny Omega and Ibushi, you know, Ric Flair and Sting, even though he eventually turned on him. It's like this idea of these rivals who have beat each other up so much that eventually they start to tag because they're the only people that they respect. They're like, I've seen what you can take because I'm the one giving it to you, and I know what you can dish out because I've been taking it, so I respect you as a tag team partner. And that was really the impetus for the team. And that angle, I mean, that angle is as old as time itself. People love that because the idea of rivals coming together is just so intriguing. You know, they're even kind of doing it in NXT with the aforementioned Biff Busick teaming up with Martin Stone. So, I mean, that's just an angle that works. So when the crowd saw them after years and years of their troubles with each other come together, I think a lot of people were just like super into it, super excited for a very long time. And that's why that tag team really like kind of caught everyone's fancy.
And what would you say the biggest thing that you took away from the match with the Bucks was? Like, for me personally, it was that Candice LeRae, again, to your Goto Ishii type of storyline, Candice LeRae can take a freaking punch, she can take a super kick, and she is going to make you pay for it when she got a chance. And it didn't seem to me, I know a lot of times when people talk about intergender wrestling, it didn't seem to be quote-unquote unrealistic, because the move she did to them in as counters didn't seem to be something that was like overly, like, as a fan of Lucha, you know, good Lucha and you know, bad Lucha. It didn't seem like bad wrestling to get to a point where she got her shine.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the biggest takeaway was Candice. I mean, she was the star of the match. It was really a big time coming out party for her after being PWG's it girl for so long. She finally kind of had that, I guess, just like this is it. This is her time to shine as the star of the company. And so, I mean, from there, it was like almost off to the races in her overness. The interesting note that I always just have to mention, and it kind of, I kill myself for this forever, is I left before that match, or not before, but as that match was going on.
Oh my God.
I was in the building. Yeah. The match before it was Chris Hero versus Kyle O'Reilly. And I was just sensory overload. I had had too much. That match was just too amazing. And I couldn't deal with watching any more wrestling. So as this match was starting, I just kind of walked out of the building. Yeah, that's definitely something that I've kind of always kicked myself over. I've kind of always regretted not being there live. I've gone back and watched the match, obviously, and thought that, it was just amazing all-around action. The blood from Candice was just phenomenal. But that's just like one little wrinkle in history of my PWG fandom that I'll never be able to drop or never forget.
And we just blinked and we just kept going. So I am so sorry. 773, welcome to the deep dive with Rich and Timothy. We were just chatting away. What do you have to chat with us about, and how can we talk with you?
This is Boris from Chicago.
Boris!
Yeah. I had to do a double take on that phone number. I was like, oh my God, I can actually call you.
That's amazing.
Yes. You're fascinating. You're awesome. With the PWG, a very unique brand, doesn't have a network, still does the DVD thing. In the future, my question is, do you think do you think the company can actually probably work with other entities like the new NWA that's coming up, or, you know, as far as connecting on the future, which is, you know, over the top? Do you think that PJ would ever think about doing that, or staying exclusive to DVDs and live shows? If I said that correctly.
Oh, no.
I mean,
go ahead, Timothy.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't think so at all, honestly. They have a streaming model through the High Spots, so you can watch the streaming stuff on the High Spots Wrestling Network. And I just don't think that they have any desire to grow or change in any way. I think that eventually wrestling fandom, wrestling in general, will move past PWG. And I think they will continue to just run shows in the same VFW hall until essentially it's not fun anymore or they can't afford it. That's the other part of the company, is that all the wrestlers involved with it have, or the people who run and own the company, have said that they've literally never put any money into it except for the initial seed money, and they've never put another dime into the company. So I think if they ever got to the point where it wasn't, you know, making them money to run the shows, that's when they stop. And I don't think that they worry about better distribution. They're not going to work with NWA or anybody else. Excalibur has fun doing commentary on progress shows over WrestleMania weekend. That might be something that happens a little bit more, but I really doubt that there's any change to their business model ever, honestly.
Okay, can I ask you guys a non-wrestling question? But
yeah,
kind of like pertains to the way wrestling is. What do you think about what Marvel did, which I consider that long-term booking, to get us to Avengers 3 and 4, and we just finally got to see the trailer to Infinity War? What do you think about the long-term booking to get us to Thanos?
I would have to defer to Rich on this one, unfortunately.
Did you see that trailer? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. Timothy, did you see the Avengers Infinity War trailer?
I did not.
There you go. So for I don't want to go too far into the weeds with it. I loved it. I think having 15 years to build a brand and then lead into mm-hmm. – pulling someone into it, like even the fact that they did the hype video the night before of people watching prior trailers and getting excited.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I was listening to a friend's podcast, the MTR Network. If you look online, I follow them, and I definitely will, in addition to all the fun things that Timothy does, I'll be sending that out after this show if you're any of you folks are interested. Marvel has someone that at nature is a fanboy, that has a knowledge of film that then he can bring into the business world. And I think with PWG, they have a knowledge of wrestling and they're now bringing it into the quote unquote business world of promotion. And it shows, like, the care that they put in the wrestlers they bring in, the show names, the creativity, like Timothy's mentioned, these are things that a normal promoter that is like a used car person that has an extra $3,000 to spend every couple of months or $30,000 to spend every couple of months wouldn't necessarily think about. They might want, because trust me, from my experience here in Pittsburgh, I worked with the quote unquote money mark who would bring in good wrestlers, but then not make money because you're also bringing in, no offense to him, Scotty Too Hotty, and you're also bringing in the Sheik, the Iron Sheik, or someone like that, where it's like, okay, you're trying to get signatures, but not too many people are going to care about this person if they're here to see good wrestling and not just the experience of wrestling, if that makes sense. So I think for PWG and for Marvel, having people like that in charge, even though for me, selfishly, I would love for PWG to expand to the point where they could maybe give the Rhodes Young Bucks attempt at a 10,000 seater a run for their money.
Yes.
I know that's not possible because that's not what their mindset is. And at least they have a mindset. You look at TNA, and while we're giving them, or some people are giving them praise for the Hardys getting their intellectual property back, a lot of that was born of the fact that they violated contractual and financial agreements with the Hardys that precipitated them having a case in court that could have been a very good precedent for wrestlers. So a place like PWG, the easiest thing they did, and that we didn't even get to talk about that, Timothy, And of course, we're running really low on time, so I'm really sorry. But you know where I'm at. You could always get a hold of me. The really cool thing for me with PWG is they got around the copyright issue before it became an issue by doing their really cool entrances on the DVDs.
Yeah, and it was smart. And it, essentially, from the beginning, there was no kind of idea that it was going to be anything but that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like I watch progress shows, and you see now they've reached that watermark of we're famous enough that people know who we are, and because of that, we can't get away with licensed music anymore.
Right.
So now when people want to hear, like, was it Jimmy Havoc? You can't hear AFI's I Hope You Suffer, because so many people watch Progress now or through WWE are interested in Progress or other means. AFI is going to want their piece of the pie.
Yeah, exactly. And that became such a big part of it that it really actually affects my enjoyment of the show, not getting to hear the entrance songs. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
Especially when I think with Chapter 58, they've gone away with the dubbing, but that was one of the most jarring things. You have a group like British Strong Style, huge heels in the company. They come out, you can't hear anything because they have to overdub the group they've hired out to do the music for them. So, that takes away from your enjoyment. You don't feel the moment anymore. Whereas if you never had that, or PEC, Regulate, you don't get to hear that when Matthew Riddle comes out.
Yeah,
you don't hear that when Riddle comes out, and it's okay because in PWG, you know what the music was, you just don't hear it, so it's not jarring. You just get the – and what is that music, by the way, the random – it sounds like every 48 hours bar fight, you know, it's not honky-tonk. It's like – It's kind of like I'm horrible with.
Yeah, it's so it's Brandon Bonham, who used to be a wrestler in PWG in the early days. It's his band, and I hate that I don't remember the name of the band, but it's something weird, and I would have to like search for it. It's like Viking something, but that's the connection though, is that it's actually someone who used to wrestle for PWG. It's their band.
That's awesome.
So. Yeah, so I'd have to look that up, but that's why they use it for essentially everything, is so that they can they're connected to him, and they're able to just, like, let that out there, kind of help promote the band. Nothing weird, like, no issues, because they have a direct relationship with the guy, and so there's, like, no problems there.
Yeah, that's I really enjoy that. So we're past the hour mark. Are you good, or we can end it here? I really don't want to be a thief of your time, because this has been awesome.
No, that's okay. So I got the band, it's Barbarian Overlords, and I'm good to go. Whatever works for you.
Okay. So Barbarian Overlords, I'm writing this down for myself. I want to go to one more break, and then I want to ask you a question about the future of PWG, current wrestlers, because we haven't even talked about one of my favorite current wrestlers in the promotion, one half of the tag team champions. We already talked about Matthew Riddle, but I want to talk about his not sidekick, because he's a little large to be a sidekick. But yeah, so let me just mute you real quick, and when we come back, we're gonna go into overtime a little bit here on the deep dive. So. Hang tight, and when we come back, we're going to talk to you guys a little bit more about PWG.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
All All right. Welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich and Timothy. We're going to close up shop here with a little bit of selfish Q&A on my part, and I want to talk to Timothy about the future of PWG and some of the newer guys who have kind of entered, kind of as he mentioned, a little bit too late perhaps. When you look at the current roster of guys who are regulars, you have teams like the Lucha Brothers, you have the Tag Champs currently. What would you say about Jeff Cobb? Was he a late guy? Is it just right for him?
So being a big-time Cobb fan and a Californian, I would say he was slightly late. But realistically, I mean, no one knew who he was until Lucha Underground. And even then, it took a while for people to really even care about Jeff Cobb. I think he was breaking out on the Southern or on the California scene in general because he is kind of more of a NorCal guy. He was starting to get some recognition. His Olympic background definitely helps. Super sweet guy with a great attitude as well outside of the ring, who just kind of was starting to put it together and then really had a breakout year at the same time as the Lucha Underground kind of signing. So he's one of these guys who, much like Ricochet, is like kind of in a limbo because of Lucha Underground and now New Japan involvement. That who knows if he's interested or if WWE is interested in him moving forward. But I would say he was just about right on time. I couldn't blame anybody for not booking him in PWG sooner, honestly. But just like you, he's one of my kind of current faves and a guy that I really just adore in wrestling in general. So.
Yeah, I mean, him and Keith Lee, their size to awesomeness ratio is something that I haven't seen in a long time. It's just you're either the plodding big man or you're the skinny big man like a Dijak. Having beefy dudes that can go like this, that's one of the reasons I love the Atlas Division in Progress. And I would hope more the future of wrestling, and this is where I want to see if you're with me on this, as we get a more svelte, a more actually built and not, you know, chemically enhanced or at least majorly chemically enhanced base for wrestlers, the large guys are kind of the not dinosaurs in terms of ancient, but in terms of like kaiju, they're the guys you bring out, kind of like when they had the Raw thing a couple of weeks ago before Survivor Series, where you unleash Braun Strowman and he just destroys people. On the same side, you unleash a Jeff Cobb on a roster, and it's you're just like, why? What are you doing to these people? Whether it's him as Matanza or him as Jeff Cobb. Well, it's worse as Jeff Cobb because it's Jeff Cobb. He's smiling while he beats you senseless.
Well, and Jeff Cobb's got the pedigree. I think Matanza, they never talk about his Olympic background, but Jeff Cobb shows that stuff off. I mean, he can, you know, he can out wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. in, you know, I think one of my top matches of the year from last year in RPW, and then he can also outpower Keith Lee. You know, so I mean, he can stand toe to toe with Michael Elgin, and you know, it's really impressive to see a guy who's got that great mix. And you talk about that being kind of the hybrid future of wrestling. I think, yeah, the guys with this size and this skill really stand out in a sea of so many, you know, svelter, skinnier, kind of more realistic body kind of ideals and shapes. Now, then, you know, you've got preeminent PWG regular Brian Cage, who definitely fits that mold of the chemically enhanced superstar of the 80s, though. So, you know, there's room for all of these guys, I guess is what I'm saying. And PWG has done a really phenomenal job of melding that. As you talked about, they have the Lucha Brothers as well, who are one of the most over acts and have phenomenal top-flight matches, and they're completely Lucha Libre style. And you just plop them in on the same show with Jeff Cobb, and it's just it's chocolate and peanut butter, I guess.
Yeah, it's – and, I mean, between Evolve and PWG bringing the triumvirate of Keith Lee, Jeff Cobb, and Matthew Riddle together in varying tag teams, so I believe they're Chosen Bros in PWG, or am I wrong on that?
Yeah.
Okay, and then you have Bask and My Bro – with Keith Lee and Riddle. I have yet to see the, you know, half ton of Holy Hell 2017 of Cobb and Lee.
Yeah, I think that would be just too much for anyone. But they did have a really interesting dynamic with them kind of both working as the bases and the baby faces in the Bola final. I'll say spoiler alert for anyone who isn't aware yet, but this year's Bola came down to those two and Ricochet, and they were working together there against a guy who probably weighed as much as one of their legs, I think.
And, yeah, it's funny you mention that, because when I went to WrestleMania weekend last year, I'm doing the same thing this year. I actively don't go to WrestleMania. I go to the shows around it, and I feel like I can enjoy WrestleMania either with my friends in a hotel or at a bar somewhere. And I got to see Ricochet wrestle each of them individually, and the matches were similar in that half of it was, oh God, how do I beat these guys? And then once he got the big men off their feet, oh God, how do I keep this guy down? And neither match did I feel like it was the same formula, even though it was a similar story. So I was very, obviously, I'm never not surprised by how awesome Ricochet is, but it was really enlightening to me how much Keith Lee and Jeff Cobb could bring that air of legitimacy to a match given the size dynamics.
Yeah, and again, as I talk about the future of wrestling, especially the future of PWG is looking pretty bright with these guys. I mean, you don't know how much longer they have Jeff Cobb, but, you know, Keith Lee is, I don't know what the deal is, but he feels like really any promoter's kind of dream come true, and you would think that they'd be, you know, everyone would be beating down the doors to get him, but it seems like he'll be in PWG at least for a while here going forward.
Yeah, and I'm very happy for it. And, you know, we mentioned the Lucha Brothers, but this would be a whole different deep dive, and I welcome you back, especially with your Lucha background, to discuss it. Pentagon Jr., Penta El Zero Miedo, Penta El Zero M, is probably, again, thanks to Lucha Underground. I did not know about him. I don't watch a lot of Lucha regularly, but once I found out about him, I needed to know more, to the point where, like, right now I'm looking at my laptop. My laptop's desktop is someone drew a picture of him with a Perros del Mal shirt with Zero Miedo with the slashes on it, and I found it and put that as my background for the last year, just because this dude, he just oozes not only charisma, but his wrestling ability coupled with it, he's a total package, and he doesn't have to speak a lick of English for me.
Right, and he definitely comes from the old school Lucha background. He definitely doesn't work necessarily harder than he needs to, but when he turns it up, he can turn it up. I mean, I saw him having his recent tour of the UK, which is a big area of my wrestling followership. I love, you know, wrestling in indies in the UK, and when he turns it up, he's, you know, a phenomenal in-ring worker, but he also knows, like, hey, I'm pretty over. The crowd kind of likes me. I don't need to kill myself every night. And again, as I say, that is Lucha Libre through and through. It's like, get the most. I mean, realistically, that's wrestling through and through. Get the most with the least. That's the whole point of it being fake. So, I mean, this guy, he really put it together. Now, you talk about not being familiar with him before Lucha Underground. I don't blame you, because he was really not a big-time deal anywhere before Lucha Underground. He was working in AAA. He was definitely good. He stood out, but he also, like, I knew that he existed just because of my familiarity with Pentagon as a gimmick in general. I had seen him here and there, didn't think much of him, but then over the course of Lucha Underground, his character has morphed and evolved. His charisma has come through, and he's become, honestly, bigger than the Pentagon character itself, and obviously clearly has come through and standing on his own two feet as his own man. With WWE's history with Latino American performers in general, and with him and his brother kind of really seemingly being a package deal, it's like they're going to go everywhere together, essentially. He's another guy who I think just continues to tear up the indies, working in Mexico, obviously working in the UK, doing super well in America. He's a guy who I could just see continuing to go for years and years. That's another point. You talk about that old school Lucha style. Those guys wrestle well into their 70s because they take care of their bodies. So, you know, he's a guy who we can enjoy and appreciate for decades to come, most likely.
And for me, I look at Pentagon Jr. similar to the way I look at Nakamura the last few years in New Japan and his current stint in the WWE, where he's that guy that knows, like you said before, when the red light's on and when it isn't on. And when the red light isn't on, I can give you just enough to say you got your money's worth, nothing more. And
yeah, and
I think, and again, this is a whole different deep dive conversation. I think fans sometimes expect the PWG level of wrestlers everywhere they go. I talk about this a lot when I discuss things with Bruce Mitchell about Trevor Lee, for instance. When I see Trevor Lee in Impact, he is nowhere near the guy that he is in PWG, and then even more, nowhere near the guy he is in CWF Mid-Atlantic.
Right. Which is unfortunate, because I just got done on This Week in Wrestling before. We review CWF every week, and just talking about Trevor and just how talented he is. But he's not putting up those big matches in TNA, and can you blame the guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, I was going to say, Penta is, you know, you talk about when the red light's on or what people want. I mean, when he has his, you know, Zero Merito versus Bro-Offs with Matthew Riddle that he's done across the globe, I mean, I don't think that those crowds are questioning why he didn't, you know, do any crazy dives, or why didn't we see, you know, any big-time blood and guts from Pentagon, because they're left happy just from them standing in the middle of the ring yelling at each other, you know? So, I mean, that's when you get that going for you, I think you're pretty good. You're kind of set for life when you got that kind of charisma.
Yeah. That's something you can't sell, because when you're old and you're broken and you got to worry about other things, people are still going to want to go out and say, do the Zero Miedo with you. They're still going to want to just watch you do your geriatrics, your various gesticulations in the ring. And you can't buy that. Timothy, I want to thank you so much for being on. Definitely whenever you're free, I would love to have you on, especially like after the first of the year, to talk about like the latest PWG show or what show that's coming up. But before you go, please let people know where they can find you on these podcasts, what sites they can go, et cetera, so that way they can get an idea of the awesomeness you bring.
Well, always, like I said, PTBN, The Place to Be Nation, Pro Wrestling Only Network. So Pro Wrestling Only Forum Board, really cool place to come and chit-chat, talk about wrestling. Also a great podcast network to listen to. PTBN, great website with a lot of stuff outside of wrestling as well, sports, comic books, beer, obviously, on my other podcast. Those are the main websites to check me out on, other than following me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. And hey, I got something. This will probably be a first time for a PW Torch podcast in general. You can follow me on Untappd. It's a beer rating app at Lucha Undead as well. And you can see what beers I'm drinking. You can toast each other online. I can see what beers you're drinking. Huh? How about everybody check that out? And most gracious thank you to you, Rich. I was really excited for weeks now getting to be on the Torch. That's a kind of a big deal for me. Even if, I'm not even going to say even if. Why am I even saying that? I'm trying to, like, be humble about it. Big deal for me. Really cool, because I've been following the Torch for years, and getting to be on is an honor for me. So thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. Like I said, always more than welcome to come on. If you need to, you know, email me, whatever. But that was awesome. And thank you guys for staying with us. Like I said, we went a little bit over time. If you have any questions, follow-up things, pwtdive@gmail.com. I'll try to have Timothy on again. We can clear some things up. We could, if you have more questions about PWG, matches to watch, shows to watch, because I definitely want to have him back on to talk about his top five shows, because, you know, we do deep dive top fives, and we're going to do it. If Progress can steal from PWG, we can steal from Progress, and that's how it goes. There's nothing new under the sun. I want to thank you guys for listening. As always, the challenge is dive into something new. Give yourself an opportunity to impress yourself with how far you can go with it. That was us. This is going to be you listening to what we do on the Torch as far as VIP. If you're interested in what we do, the 30 years plus of outstanding coverage provided by our El Capitan and editor-in-chief, Wade Keller, our senior Torch columnist, Bruce Mitchell, Sean Radican, with whom I work often, The Fix with Todd Martin, Sure Dog writer, LA Times writer, lawyer, raconteur, venter, I don't know if he's actually a mentor, but I just got on a roll. Pat McNeil and more. Tune into this, and we'll tell you how you can join up. Have a great night, guys, and keep diving.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is love.